Harper Audio presents Debt of Bones by Terry Goodkind, performed by Sam Chuchovas.
What do you got in the sack, dearie?
Abby was watching a distant flock of whistling swans, graceful white specks against the dark, soaring walls of the keep, as they made their interminable journey past ramparts, bastions, towers, and bridges lit by the low sun. The sinister specter of the keep had seemed to be staring back the whole of the day as Abby had waited. She turned to the hunched old woman in front of her. I'm sorry, did you ask me something?
I asked what you got in your sack.
As the woman peered up, she licked the tip of her tongue through the slot where a tooth was missing.
Something precious.
Abby clutched the burlap sack to herself as she shrank a little from the grinning woman. Just some of my things, that's all. An officer, trailed by a troop of assistants, aides, and guards, marched out from under the massive portcullis that loomed nearby. Abby and the rest of the supplicants waiting at the head of the stone bridge moved tighter to the side, even though the soldiers had ample room to pass. The officer, his grim gaze unseeing as he swept by, didn't return the salute as the bridge guards clapped fists to the armor over their hearts. All day, soldiers from different lands, as well as the home guard from the vast city of Idendril below, had been coming and going from the keep. Some had looked travel-sore. Some wore uniforms still filthy with dirt, soot, and blood from recent battles. Abby had even seen two officers from her homeland of Pendison Reach. They had looked to her to be little more than boys, but boys with the thin veneer of youth shedding too soon, like a snake casting off its skin before its time, leaving the emerging maturity scarred. Abby had also seen such an array of important people as she could scarcely believe. Sorceresses, counselors, and even a confessor come up from the confessor's palace down in the city. On her way up to the keep, there was rarely a turn in the winding road that hadn't offered Abby a view of the sprawling splendor in white stone that was the Confessor's Palace. The Alliance of the Midlands, headed by the Mother Confessor herself, held council in the palace, and there, too, lived the Confessors. In her whole life, Abby had seen a confessor only once before. The woman had come to see Abby's mother, and Abby, not 10 years at the time, had been unable to keep from staring at the confessor's long hair. Other than her mother, no woman in Abby's small town of Coney Crossing was sufficiently important to have hair long enough to touch the shoulders. Abby's own fine, dark brown hair covered her ears, but no more. Coming through the city on the way to the keep, it had been hard for her not to gape at noble women with hair to their shoulders and even a little beyond. But the confessor going up to the keep, dressed in the simple, satiny black dress of a confessor, had hair that reached halfway down her back. She wished she could have had a better look at the rare sight of such long, luxuriant hair and the woman important enough to possess it. But Abby had gone to a knee with the rest of the company at the bridge, and like the rest of them, feared to raise her bowed head to look up lest she meet the gaze of the other. It was said that to meet the gaze of a confessor could cost you your mind if you were lucky, and your soul if you weren't. Even though Abby's mother had said it was untrue, that only the deliberate touch of such a woman could effect such a deed, Abby feared, this day of all days, to test the stories. The old woman in front of her, clothed in layered skirts topped with one dyed of henna and mantled with a dark draping shawl, watched the soldiers pass and then leaned closer.
Do better to bring a bone, dearie. I hear that there be those in the city who will sell a bone such as you need for the right price. Wizards don't take no salt pork for a need. They got salt pork.
She glanced past Abby to the others to see them occupied with their own interests.
Better to sell your things and hope you have enough to buy a bone. Wizards don't want what some country girl brung 'em. Favors from wizards don't come easy.
She glanced at the backs of the soldiers as they reached the far side of the bridge.
Not even for those doing their bidding, it would seem.
I just want to talk to them, that's all.
Salt pork won't get you talk neither, as I hear tell.
She eyed Abby's hand, trying to cover the smooth, round shape beneath the burlap.
Or a jug you made, that's what it is, dearie.
Her brown eyes, set in a wrinkled, leathery mask, turned up, peering with sudden, humorless intent.
A jug?
Yes, Abby said. A jug I made. The woman smiled her skepticism and fingered a lick of short gray hair back under her wool head wrap. Her gnarled fingers closed round the smocking on the forearm of Abby's crimson dress, pulling the arm up a bit to have a look.
Maybe you could get the price of a proper bone for your bracelet.
Abby glanced down at the bracelet made of two wires twisted together in interlocking circles. My mother gave me this. It has no value but to me. A slow smile came to the woman's weather-cracked lips.
The spirits believe that there is no stronger power than a mother's want to protect her child.
Abby gently pulled her arm away. The spirits know the truth of that. Uncomfortable under the scrutiny of the suddenly talkative woman, Abby searched for a place safe to settle her gaze. It made her dizzy to look down into the yawning chasm beneath the bridge, and she was weary of watching the wizard's keep, so she pretended that her attention had been caught as an excuse to turn back toward the collection of people, mostly men, waiting with her at the head of the bridge. She busied herself with nibbling on the last crust of bread from the loaf she had bought down in the market before coming up to the keep. Abby felt awkward talking to strangers. In her whole life, she had never seen so many people, much less people she didn't know. She knew every person in Coney Crossing. The city made her apprehensive, but not as apprehensive as the keep towering on the mountain above it, and that not as much as her reason for being there. She just wanted to go home. But there would be no home, at least nothing to go home to, if she didn't do this. All eyes turned up at the rattle of hooves coming out under the portcullis. Huge horses, all dusky brown or black and bigger than any Abby had ever seen, came thundering toward them. Men bedecked with polished breastplates, chain mail and leather, and most carrying lances or poles topped with long flags of high office and rank, urged their mounts onward. They raised dust and gravel as they gathered speed crossing the bridge, a wild rush of color and sparkles of light from metal flashing past. Sandarian lancers, from the descriptions Abby had heard. She had trouble imagining the enemy with the nerve to go up against men such as these. Her stomach roiled. She realized she had no need to imagine, and no reason to put her hope in brave men such as those lancers. Her only hope was the wizard. And that hope was slipping away as she stood waiting. There was nothing for it but to wait. Abby turned back to the keep just in time to see a statuesque woman in simple robes stride out through the opening in the massive stone wall. Her fair skin stood out all the more against straight dark hair parted in the middle and readily reaching her shoulders. Some of the men had been whispering about the sight of the Sandarian officers, but at the sight of the woman, everyone fell to silence. The four soldiers at the head of the stone bridge made way for the woman as she approached the supplicants.
Sorceress, the old woman whispered to Abby.
Abby hardly needed the old woman's counsel to know it was a sorceress. Abby recognized the simple flaxen robes decorated at the neck with yellow and red beads sewn in the ancient symbols of the profession. Some of her earliest memories were of being held in her mother's arms and touching beads like those she saw now. The sorceress bowed her head to the people and then offered a smile. Please forgive us for keeping you waiting out here the whole of the day. It is not from lack of respect, nor something we customarily do, but with a war on our hands, such precautions are regrettably unavoidable. We hope none took offense at the delay. The crowd mumbled that they didn't. Abby doubted there was one among them bold enough to claim otherwise. How goes the war? A man behind asked. The sorceress's even gaze turned to him. With the blessings of the good spirits, it will end soon. May the spirits will that Dara is crushed, beseeched the man. Without response, the sorceress appraised the faces watching her, waiting to see if anyone else would speak or ask a question. None did. Please, come with me then. The council meeting has ended, and a couple of the wizards will take the time to see you all. As the sorceress turned back to the keep and started out, three men strode up along the supplicants and put themselves at the head of the line, right in front of the old woman. The woman snatched a velvet sleeve.
Who do you think you are?
She snapped.
Taking a place before me, when I've been here the whole of the day.
The oldest of the three, dressed in rich robes of dark purple with contrasting red sewn inside the length of the slits up the sleeves, looked to be a noble with his two advisers, or perhaps guards. He turned a glare on the woman. "You don't mind, do you?" It didn't sound at all to Abby like a question. The old woman took her hand back and fell mute. The man, the ends of his gray hair coiled on his shoulders, glanced at Abby. His hooded eyes gleamed with challenge. She swallowed and remained silent. She didn't have any objection either, at least none she was willing to voice. For all she knew, the noble was important enough to see to it that she was denied an audience. She couldn't afford to take that chance now that she was this close. Abby was distracted by a tingling sensation from the bracelet. Blindly, her fingers glided over the wrist of the hand holding the sack. The wire bracelet felt warm. It hadn't done that since her mother had died. In the presence of so much magic as was at a place such as this, it didn't really surprise her. The crowd moved out to follow the sorceress.
"Mean they are," the woman whispered over her shoulder. "Mean as a winter night and just as cold."
"Those men," Abby whispered back.
"No,"
the woman tilted her head.
"Sorceresses, wizards too, that's who. All those born with the gift of magic. You better have something important in that sack, or the wizards might turn you to dust for no other reason than that they'd enjoy it."
Abby pulled her sack tight in her arms. The meanest thing her mother had done in the whole of her life was to die before she could see her granddaughter. Abby swallowed back the urge to cry and prayed to the dear spirits that the old woman was wrong about wizards and that they were as understanding as sorceresses. She prayed fervently that this wizard would help her. She prayed for forgiveness, too, that the good spirits would understand. Abby worked at holding a calm countenance even though her insides were in turmoil. She pressed a fist to her stomach. She prayed for strength. Even in this, she prayed for strength. The sorceress, the three men, the old woman, Abby, and then the rest of the supplicants passed under the huge iron portcullis and onto the keep grounds. Inside the massive outer wall, Abby was surprised to discover the air warm. Outside, it had been a chill autumn day, but inside, the air was spring fresh and warm. The road up the mountain, the stone bridge over the chasm, and then the opening under the portcullis appeared to be the only way into the keep, unless you were a bird. Soaring walls of dark stone with high windows surrounded the gravel courtyard inside. There were a number of doors around the courtyard, and ahead, a roadway tunneled deeper into the keep. Despite the warm air, Abby was chilled to the bone by the place. She wasn't sure that the old woman wasn't right about wizards. Life in Coney Crossing was far removed from matters of wizards. Abby had never seen a wizard before, nor did she know anyone who had, except for her mother, and her mother never spoke of them, except to caution that where wizards were concerned, you couldn't trust even what you saw with your own eyes. The sorceress led them up four granite steps worn smooth over the ages by countless footsteps, through a doorway set back under a lintel of pink-flecked black granite, and into the keep proper. The sorceress lifted an arm into the darkness, sweeping it to the side. Lamps along the wall sprang to flame. It had been simple magic, not a very impressive display of the gift, but several of the people behind fell to worried whispering as they passed on through the wide hall. It occurred to Abby that if this little bit of conjuring would frighten them, then they had no business going to see wizards. They wended their way across the sunken floor of an imposing anteroom, the likes of which Abby could never even have imagined. Red marble columns all around supported arches below balconies. In the center of the room, a fountain sprayed water high overhead. The water fell back to cascade down through a succession of ever larger scalloped bowls. Officers, sorceresses, and a variety of others sat about on white marble benches or huddled in small groups, all engaged in seemingly earnest conversation masked by the sound of the water. In a much smaller room beyond, the sorceress gestured for them to be seated at a line of carved oak benches along one wall. Abby was bone-weary and relieved to sit at last. Light from windows above the benches lit three tapestries hanging on the high, far wall. The three together covered nearly the entire wall and made up one scene of a grand procession through a city. Abby had never seen anything like it. But with the way her dread careened through her thoughts, she could summon little pleasure in seeing even such a majestic tableau. In the center of the cream-colored marble floor, inset in brass lines, was a circle with a square inside it, its corners touching the circle. Inside the square sat another circle just large enough to touch the insides of the square. The center circle held an eight-pointed star. Lines radiated out from the points of the star, piercing all the way through both circles, every other line bisecting a corner of the square. The design, called a grace, was often drawn by those with the gift. The outer circle represented the beginnings of the infinity of the spirit world out beyond. The square represented the boundaries separating the spirit world, the underworld, the world of the dead, from the inner circle, which represented the limits of the world of life. In the center of it all was the star, representing the light, the creator. It was a depiction of the continuum of the gift, from the creator, through life, and at death, crossing the boundary to eternity with the spirits in the keeper's realm of the underworld. But it represented a hope, too, a hope to remain in the creator's light from birth, through life and beyond in the underworld. It was said that only the spirits of those who did great wickedness in life would be denied the Creator's light in the underworld. Abby knew she would be condemned to an eternity with the Keeper of Darkness in the underworld. She had no choice. The sorceress folded her hands. An aide will come to get you each in turn. A wizard will see each of you. The war burns hot. Please keep your petition brief. She gazed down the line of people. It is out of a sincere obligation to those we serve that the wizards see supplicants. But please try to understand that individual desires are often detrimental to the greater good. By pausing to help one, then many are denied help. Thus, denial of a request is not a denial of your need, but acceptance of greater need. In times of peace, it is rare for wizards to grant the narrow wants of supplicants. At a time like this, a time of a great war, it is almost unheard of. Please understand that it has not to do with what we would wish, but is a matter of necessity. She watched the line of supplicants, but saw none willing to abandon their purpose. Abby certainly would not. Very well, then. We have two wizards able to take supplicants at this time. We will bring you each to one of them. The sorceress turned to leave. Abby rose to her feet. Please, mistress, a word if I may. The sorceress settled an unsettling gaze on Abby. Speak. Abby stepped forward. I must see the first wizard himself. Wizard Zorander. One eyebrow arched. The first wizard is a very busy man. Abby reached into her sack and pulled out the neckband from her mother's robes. She stepped into the center of the grace and kissed the red and yellow beads on the neckband. I am Abigail, born of Helsa. On the grace and my mother's soul, I must see Wizard Zorander. Please, it is no trivial journey I have made. Lives are at stake. The sorceress watched the beaded band being returned to the sack. Abigail, born of Helsa. Her gaze rose to meet Abby's. I will take your words to the first wizard.
Mistress! Abby turned to see the old woman on her feet. I would be well pleased to see the first wizard, too.
The three men rose up. The oldest, the one apparently in charge of the three, gave the sorceress a look so barren of timidity that it bordered on contempt. His long gray hair fell forward over his velvet robes as he glanced down the line of seated people, seeming to dare them to stand. When none did, he returned his attention to the sorceress.
I will see Wizard Zorander.
The sorceress appraised those on their feet, and then looked down the line of supplicants on the bench. The first wizard has earned a name, the Wind of Death. He is feared no less by many of us than by our enemies. Anyone else who would bait fate? None of those on the bench had the courage to gaze into her fierce stare. To the last, they all silently shook their heads. Please wait, she said to those seated. Someone will shortly be out to take you to a wizard. She looked once more to the five people standing. Are you all very, very sure of this? Abby nodded. The old woman nodded. The noble glared. Very well, then. Come with me. The noble and his two men stepped in front of Abby. The old woman seemed content to take a station at the end of the line. They were led deeper into the keep, through narrow halls and wide corridors, some dark and austere and some of astounding grandeur. Everywhere there were soldiers of the Home Guard, their breastplates or chainmail covered with red tunics banded around their edges in black. All were heavily armed with swords or battle axes. All had knives, and many additionally carried pikes tipped with winged and barbed steel. At the top of a broad white marble staircase, the stone railings spiraled at the ends to open wide onto a room of warm oak paneling. Several of the raised panels held lamps with polished silver reflectors. Atop a three-legged table sat a double-bowl cut-glass lamp with twin chimneys, their flames adding to the mellow light from the reflector lamps. A thick carpet of ornate blue patterns covered nearly the entire wood floor. To each side of a double door stood one of the meticulously dressed home guard. Both men were equally huge. They looked to be men more than able to handle any trouble that might come up the stairs. The sorceress nodded toward the dozen thickly tufted leather chairs set in four groups. Abby waited until the others had seated themselves in two of the groupings and then sat by herself in another. She placed the sack in her lap and rested her hands over its contents. The sorceress stiffened her back. I will tell the first wizard that he has supplicants who wish to see him. A guard opened one of the double doors for her. As she was swallowed into the great room beyond, Abby was able to snatch a quick glimpse. She could see that it was well lighted by glassed skylights. There were other doors in the gray stone of the walls. Before the door closed, Abby was also able to see a number of people, men and women both, all rushing hither and yon. Abby sat turned away from the old woman and the three men, as with one hand she idly stroked the sack in her lap. She had little fear that the men would talk to her, but she didn't want to talk to the woman. It was a distraction. She passed the time going over in her mind what she planned to say to Wizard Zorander. At least she tried to go over it in her mind. Mostly, all she could think about was what the sorceress had said, that the first wizard was called the Wind of Death, not only by the Darrens, but also by his own people of the Midlands. Abby knew it was not to scare off supplicants from a busy man. Abby herself had heard people whisper of their great wizard, the Wind of Death. Those whispered words were uttered in dread. The lands of Dara had sound reason to fear this man as their enemy. He had laid waste to countless of their army, from what Abby had heard. Of course, if they hadn't invaded the Midlands bent on conquest, they would not have felt the hot wind of death. Had they not invaded, Abby wouldn't be sitting there in the wizard's keep. She would be at home, and everyone she loved would be safe. Abby marked again the odd tingling sensation from the bracelet. She ran her fingers over it, testing its unusual warmth. This close to a person of such power, it didn't surprise her that the bracelet was warming. Her mother had told her to wear it always, and that someday it would be of value. Abby didn't know how, and her mother had died without ever explaining. Sorceresses were known for the way they kept secrets, even from their own daughters. Perhaps if Abby had been born gifted. She sneaked a peek over her shoulder at the others. The old woman was leaning back in her chair, staring at the doors. The noble's attendants sat with their hands folded as they casually eyed the room. The noble was doing the oddest thing. He had a lock of sandy-colored hair wound around a finger. He stroked his thumb over the lock of hair as he glared at the doors. Abby wanted the wizard to hurry up and see her. But time stubbornly dragged by. In a way, she wished he would refuse. No, she told herself, that was unacceptable. No matter her fear, no matter her revulsion, she must do this. Abruptly, the door opened. The sorceress strode out toward Abby. The noble surged to his feet. I will see him first. His voice was cold threat. That is not a request. It is our right to see him first, Abby said without forethought. When the sorceress folded her hands, Abby decided she had best go on. I've waited since dawn. This woman was the only one waiting before me. These men came at the last of the day. Abby started when the old woman's gnarled fingers gripped her forearm.
Why don't we let these men go first, dearie? It matters not who arrived first, but who has the most important business.
Abby wanted to scream that her business was important. But she realized that the old woman might be saving her from serious trouble in accomplishing her business. Reluctantly, she gave the sorceress a nod. As the sorceress led the three men through the door, Abby could feel the old woman's eyes on her back. Abby hugged the sack against the burning anxiety in her abdomen and told herself that it wouldn't be long, and then she would see him. As they waited, the old woman remained silent, and Abby was glad for that. Occasionally she glanced at the door, imploring the good spirits to help her. But she realized it was futile. The good spirits wouldn't be disposed to help her in this. A roar came from the room beyond the doors. It was like the sound of an arrow zipping through the air, or a long switch whipping, but much louder, intensifying rapidly. It ended with a shrill crack, accompanied by a flash of light coming under the doors and around their edges. The doors shuddered on their hinges. Sudden silence rang in Abby's ears. She found herself gripping the arms of the chair. Both doors opened. The noble's two attendants marched out, followed by the sorceress. The three stopped in the waiting room. Abby sucked a breath. One of the two men was cradling the noble's head in the crook of an arm. The wan features of the face were frozen in a mute scream. Thick strings of blood dripped onto the carpet. "Show them out," the sorceress hissed through gritted teeth to one of the two guards at the door. The guard dipped his pike toward the stairs, ordering them ahead, and then followed the two men down. Crimson drops splattered onto the white marble of the steps as they descended. Abby sat in stiff, wide-eyed shock. The sorceress wheeled back to Abby and the old woman. The woman rose to her feet.
"I believe that I would rather not bother the first wizard today. I will return another day if need be."
She hunched lower toward Abby.
"I am called Mariska."
Her brow drew down.
"May the good spirits grant that you succeed."
She shuffled to the stairs, rested a hand on the marble railing, and started down. The sorceress snapped her fingers and gestured. The remaining guard rushed to accompany the woman as the sorceress turned back to Abby. "The first wizard will see you now." Abby gulped air, trying to get her breath as she staggered to her feet. What happened? Why did the first wizard do that? The man was sent on behalf of another to ask a question of the first wizard. The first wizard gave his answer. Abby clutched her sack to herself for dear life as she gaped at the blood on the floor. "Might that be the answer to my question, if I ask it?" "I don't know the question you would ask." For the first time, the sorceress's expression softened just a bit. "Would you like me to see you out? You could see another wizard, or perhaps, after you've given more thought to your petition, return another day if you still wish it." Abby fought back tears of desperation. There was no choice. She shook her head. "I must see him." The sorceress let out a deep breath. "Very well." She put a hand under Abby's arm as if to keep her on her feet. "The first wizard will see you now." Abby hugged the contents of her sack as she was led into the chamber where waited the first wizard. Torches in iron sconces were not yet burning. The late afternoon light from the glassed roof windows was still strong enough to illuminate the room. It smelled of pitch, lamp oil, roasted meat, wet stone, and stale sweat. Inside, confusion and commotion reigned. There were people everywhere, and they all seemed to be talking at once. Stout tables set about the room in no discernible pattern were covered with books, scrolls, maps, chalk, unlit oil lamps, burning candles, partially eaten meals, sealing wax, pens, and a clutter of every sort of odd object, from balls of knotted string to half-spilled sacks of sand. People stood about the tables, engaged in conversations or arguments, as others tapped passages in books, pored over scrolls, or moved little painted weights about on maps. Others rolled slices of roasted meat plucked from platters and nibbled as they watched, or offered opinions between swallows. The sorceress, still holding Abby under her arm, leaned closer as they proceeded. "You will have the first wizard's divided attention. There will be other people talking to him at the same time. Don't be distracted. He will be listening to you as he also listens to or talks to others. Just ignore the others who are speaking and ask what you have come to ask. He will hear you." Abby was dumbfounded. "While he's talking to other people?" "Yes." Abby felt the hand squeeze her arm ever so slightly. "Try to be calm and not to judge by what has come before you. The killing." That was what she meant. That a man had come to speak to the first wizard, and he had been killed for it. She was simply supposed to put that from her thoughts. When she glanced down, she saw that she was walking through a trail of blood. She didn't see the headless body anywhere. Her bracelet tingled, and she looked down at it. The hand under her arm halted her. When Abby looked up, she saw a confusing knot of people before her. Some rushed in from the sides as others rushed away. Some flailed their arms as they spoke with great conviction. So many were talking that Abby could scarcely understand a word of it. At the same time, others were leaning in, nearly whispering. She felt as if she were confronting a human beehive. Abby's attention was snagged by a form in white to the side. The instant she saw the long fall of hair and the violet eyes looking right at her, Abby went rigid. A small cry escaped her throat as she fell to her knees and bowed over until her back protested. She trembled and shuddered, fearing the worst. In the instant before she dropped to her knees, she had seen that the elegant, satiny white dress was cut square at the neck, the same as the black dresses had been. The long flag of hair was unmistakable. Abby had never seen the woman before, but without doubt knew who she was. There could be no mistaking this woman. Only one of them wore the white dress. It was the Mother Confessor herself. She heard muttering above her, but feared to listen, lest it was death being summoned. "Rise, my child," came a clear voice. Abby recognized it as the formal response of the Mother Confessor to one of her people. It took a moment for Abby to realize it represented no threat, but simple acknowledgement. She stared at a smear of blood on the floor as she debated what to do next. Her mother had never instructed her as to how to conduct herself should she ever meet the Mother Confessor. As far as she knew, no one from Coney Crossing had ever seen the Mother Confessor, much less met her. Then again, none of them had ever seen a wizard either. Overhead, the sorceress whispered a growl. "Rise." Abby scurried to her feet, but kept her eyes to the floor. Even though the smear of blood was making her sick, she could smell it, like a fresh butchering of one of their animals. From the long trail, it looked as if the body had been dragged away to one of the doors in the back of the room. The sorceress spoke calmly into the chaos. "Wizard Zorander, this is Abigail, born of Helsa. She wishes a word with you. Abigail, this is First Wizard Zedekus Zul Zorander." Abby dared to cautiously lift her gaze. Hazel eyes gazed back. To each side before her were knots of people. Big, forbidding officers. Some of them looked as if they might be generals. Several old men in robes, some simple and some ornate. Several middle-aged men, some in robes and some in livery. Three women, sorceresses all. A variety of other men and women, and the Mother Confessor. The man at the center of the turmoil, the man with the hazel eyes, was not what Abby had been expecting. She had expected some grizzled, gruff old man. This man was young, perhaps as young as she. Lean but sinewy, he wore the simplest of robes, hardly better made than Abby's burlap sack. the mark of his high office. Abby had not anticipated this sort of man in such an office as that of First Wizard. She remembered what her mother had told her. Not to trust what your eyes told you where wizards were concerned. All about, people spoke to him, argued at him. A few even shouted. But the wizard was silent as he looked into her eyes. His face was pleasing enough to look upon, gentle in appearance, even though his wavy brown hair looked ungovernable. But his eyes! Abby had never seen the likes of those eyes. They seemed to see all, to know all, to understand all. At the same time, they were bloodshot and weary-looking, as if sleep eluded him. They had, too, the slightest glaze of distress. Even so, he was calm at the center of the storm. For that moment that his attention was on her, it was as if no one else were in the room. The lock of hair Abby had seen around the noble's finger was now held wrapped around the First Wizard's finger. He brushed it to his lips before lowering his arm. "I am told you are the daughter of a sorceress." His voice was placid water flowing through the tumult raging all about. "Are you gifted, child?" "No, sir." Even as she answered, he was turning to another who had just finished speaking. "I told you if you do, we chance losing them. Send word that I want him to cut south." The tall officer to whom the wizard spoke threw his hands up. "But he said they've reliable scouting information that the Darrens went east on him." "That's not the point," the wizard said. "I want that pass to the south sealed. That's where their main force went. They have gifted among them. They are the ones we must kill." The tall officer was saluting with a fist to his heart as the wizard turned to an old sorceress. "Yes, that's right, 3 invocations before attempting the transposition. I found the reference last night." The old sorceress departed to be replaced by a man jabbering in a foreign tongue as he opened a scroll and held it up for the wizard to see. The wizard squinted toward it, reading a moment before waving the man away while giving orders in the same foreign language. The wizard turned to Abby. "You're a skip?" Abby felt her face heat and her ears burn. "Yes, Wizard Zorander." "Nothing to be ashamed of, child," he said, while the mother confessor herself was whispering confidentially in his ear. But it was something to be ashamed of. The gift hadn't passed on to her from her mother. It had skipped her. The people of Coney Crossing had depended on Abby's mother. She helped with those who were ill or hurt. She advised people on matters of community and those of family. For some, she arranged marriages. For some, she meted out discipline. For some, she bestowed favors available only through magic. She was a sorceress. She protected the people of Coney Crossing. She was revered openly. By some, she was feared and loathed privately. She was revered for the good she did for the people of Coney Crossing. By some, she had been feared and loathed because she had the gift, because she wielded magic. Others wanted nothing so much as to live their lives without any magic about. Abby had no magic and couldn't help with illness or injury or shapeless fears. She dearly wished she could, but she couldn't. When Abby had asked her mother why she would abide all the thankless resentment, her mother told her that helping was its own reward, and you should not expect gratitude for it. She said that if you went through life expecting gratitude for the help you provided, you might end up leading a miserable life. When her mother was alive, Abby had been shunned in subtle ways. After her mother died, the shunning became more overt. It had been expected by the people of Coney Crossing that she would serve as her mother had served. People didn't understand about the gift, how it often wasn't passed on to an offspring. Instead, they thought Abby selfish. The wizard was explaining something to a sorceress about the casting of a spell. When he finished, his gaze swept past Abby on its way to someone else. She needed his help now. "What is it you wanted to ask me, Abigail?" Abby's fingers tightened on the sack. "It's about my home of Coney Crossing." She paused while the wizard pointed in a book being held out to him. He rolled his hand at her, gesturing for her to go on as a man was explaining an intricacy to do with inverting a duplex spell. "There's terrible trouble there," Abby said. "Darran troops came through the crossing. The first wizard turned to an older man with a long white beard. By his simple robes, Abby guessed him to be a wizard, too. "I'm telling you, Thomas, it can be done," Wizard Zorander insisted. "I'm not saying I agree with the council. I'm just telling you what I found and their unanimous decision that it be done. I'm not claiming to understand the details of just how it works, but I've studied it. It can be done. As I told the council, I can activate it. I have yet to decide if I agree with them that I should." The man, Thomas, wiped a hand across his face.
"You mean what I heard is true, then? That you really do think it's possible? Are you out of your mind, Zorander?"
"I found it in a book in the First Wizard's private enclave. A book from before the war with the Old World. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've cast a whole series of verification webs to test it." He turned his attention to Abby. "Yes, that would be Anargo's Legion. Coney Crossing is in Penderson Reach."
"That's right," Abby said. "And so then this Darren army swept through there and..."
"Penderson Reach refused to join with the rest of the Midlands under central command to resist the invasion from Dara. Standing by their sovereignty, they chose to fight the enemy in their own way. They have to live with the consequences of their actions." The old man was tugging on his beard.
"Still, do you know if it's real? Or proven out? I mean, that book would have to be thousands of years old. It might have been conjecture. Verification webs don't always confirm the entire structure of such a thing."
"I know that as well as you, Thomas, but I'm telling you it's real," Wizard Zorander said. His voice lowered to a whisper. "The spirits preserve us. It's genuine." Abby's heart was pounding. She wanted to tell him her story, but she couldn't seem to get a word in. He had to help her. It was the only way. An army officer rushed in from one of the back doors. He pushed his way into the crowd around the first wizard.
"Wizard Zorander, I've just gotten word. When we unleashed the horns you sent, they worked. Erdlin's force turned tail."
Several voices fell silent. Others didn't. "At least 3,000 years old," the first wizard said to the man with the beard. He put a hand on the newly arrived officer's shoulder and leaned close. "Tell General Brainard to hold short at the Kern River. Don't burn the bridges, but hold them. Tell him to split his men. Leave half to keep Erdlin's force from changing their mind. Hopefully they won't be able to replace their field wizard. Have Brainard take the rest of his men north to help cut Anargo's escape route. That's where our concern lies, but we may still need the bridges to go after Erdland." One of the other officers, an older man looking possibly to be a general himself, went red in the face.
"Halt at the river? When the horns have done their job, and we have them on the run? But why? We can take them down before they have a chance to regroup and join up with another force to come back at us."
Hazel eyes turned toward the man. "And you know what waits over the border? How many men will die if Panis Ral has something waiting that the horns can't turn away? How many innocent lives has it already cost us? How many of our men will die to bleed them on their own land? Land we don't know as they do.
And how many of our people will die if we don't eliminate their ability to come back at us another day? We must pursue them. Panis Ral will never rest. He'll be working to conjure up something else to gut us all in our sleep. We must hunt them down and kill every last one."
"I'm working on that," the first wizard said cryptically. The old man twisted his beard and made a sarcastic face.
"Yes, he thinks he can unleash the underworld itself on them.